Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 346 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm ready for this summer weather, Todd.
Oh, I think it's here. It's going to be hot today and tomorrow and the next day.
I have my grass cut.
I have my grass cut today, so I'm not in 90-degree weather having my second heart attack.
We'll discuss more grass cutting stuff for the After Dark. But did the fancy gentleman finally find someone to mow his lawn?
I'm unawares. I didn't go over to watch Doctor Who this weekend, so maybe next weekend. I'll find out. I know you're worried.
I am concerned about the fancy gentleman.
He is the fanciest of gentlemen.
God forbid something happened to him.
Oh, where would I get all my Best Buy news from?
I was going to say, who would buy all those Asriel pages?
Oh, and all those Swisher cards.
Yes.
So how you been?
Good. The change in weather is making me sleep poorly, so I pulled something in my back, so I feel terrible. And a lot of wrestling stuff is coming up here in the next couple months, a lot of promotional stuff involving me, and I just got to watch a video of myself promoting a friend of the show and past After Dark guest Tom Green's Dynamite Cup that's happening next month. In HD, Todd, you could really see the grays in my beard pop.
Wow. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. A cup made out of dynamite sounds extremely dangerous.
Right.
I mean, like, you take a drink, and it could blow up in your face.
Who's to say that it's a cup made of dynamite? It just might be a cup that you could store dynamite in.
I'm hoping it's an actual cup of dynamite. And as you said, the only thing that could stop it is monkey milk.
By the way, I pitched your whole monkey milk scenario.
Yes, to
the man himself, and he just chuckled. He didn't say no, and he didn't say yes. He just chuckled.
Well, the clock is ticking away.
Uh-huh.
So you never know. It's brilliant, though. It is brilliant.
I'm still laughing about it today.
I know. Just need a hose. That's all I need.
So what do we got to talk about on the show today? Actual comic book stuff, Todd.
DC announces a project that may get me to care about the New Gods. They also announced the big event spinning out of the button. And comic creators and their feuds with signature authenticators like CGC and CSBS, I think it is. I don't even know.
You're half right on that one.
The BS part. But anyway. Con news, free digital books and sales. What we read last week, what we're both looking forward to, we have the Star Wars Screaming Citadel number one and The Fix. What we're looking forward to this week, and our Todd and Joe have issues, is Batman Adventures Mad Love. And at the end of the show, we'll have spoiler-filled talk of The Flash. Hopefully more wig talk. I know how much you like to talk about wigs.
I do like to talk about wigs.
You are the man who knows more about wigs than anybody I know.
And as you'd mentioned the other day, how I wish I was the Rip Taylor of professional wrestling.
Oh.
I do model my hairstyle after his wigs that he wears.
Oh, that's fan. You just need a bag of confetti. That's all you need.
Is Rip Taylor still alive?
Yes, I'm 99% sure Rip. I think we all would have got a day off of work if Rip Taylor died. Be a national day of mourning. Is he still alive?
So first of all, it appears as though he's still alive.
Right.
Now, granted, his website and his internet presence hasn't been updated since January. But nothing is coming up saying that he has passed. But when you search Rip Taylor, it comes up saying Rip Taylor, King of Confetti.
Oh boy!
Yes,
he's 82 years old. So who knows? The King of Confetti.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
All right.
The Tom King of confetti?
Oh, well, that leads us into our first story there, Todd.
Look at me.
Nice ham-fisted segue.
I was working on that all day. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, again, we go over the script, you know, all those rehearsals that don't make air.
The only script I get are prescriptions.
The only script I'm worried about is a script for some pills. Doot, doot, doot.
Oh, boy.
So, it has been speculated for weeks, but the announcement has been made official through something called Glue Magazine that Tom King and Mitch Gerards are going to be doing a Mr. Miracle 12-issue maxi-series starting this summer.
Right.
It's more or less going to be a New Gods presentation sort of thing. And apparently the first issue is done, because when this announcement came out, everyone who knows Tom King, and even in the article themselves, is like, oh, the first issue is great, the first issue is done, I got a chance to see the first issue, and so on and so forth.
How come we didn't get a review copy?
Well, I'm working on it.
Preview review.
Mm-hmm. So, looking at the art looks very interesting for some of the preview pages, and this is one of those deals where, now, apparently Tom King and Gerards had worked before on a book called The Sheriff of Babylon, which I'm unfamiliar with.
Me too.
They did work together, I think, on Omega Men, which I did read some of. I am a little bit behind on that. And they did work together on The Vision for Marvel, and Vision for Marvel is fantastic. And Tom King's current work on Batman is unbelievable.
Right.
So just based on that alone, and the fact that of the New Gods, the fact that this is being focused upon Mr. Miracle, who is arguably the best of the New Gods, this is a no-brainer for me. The official announcement just was icing on the cake. Excitement for this book is very high.
I'm with you. Mr. Miracle is one of the few good New Gods. So probably one of my favorites, and that's because of his, you know, run in jail eye. So there's always that. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm pumped for this. I'll give Tom King, you know, if Tom King was going to do Inhumans, I'd give it a shot.
But, right, and that was going to, from your news tease at the beginning of the show, when you said that a DC creative team is going to make you care about the New Gods. Would this be a good enough creative team to make you care about the Inhumans? I say no.
Listen, if Tom King's The Adventures of Lockjaw...
Okay, Lockjaw is different than the Inhumans, Todd. He may be an Inhuman, but he's also got his ties to the Pet Avengers.
Oh,
even though sometimes he is a dog, and other times he is an actual Inhuman who just looks like a dog, depending on how the stories want to be told.
I know what you're saying, but either way, that's technically still an Inhuman book. So I don't care. I don't care. I'm you know. So yes, I would read a Tom King Inhuman book.
That would be a tough sell for me, just because the Inhumans have such a stink on them for me. Well, the New Gods don't have the same stink as the Inhumans do currently.
The New Gods have a pretty good stink for me. They do. I'm not a big fan of the New Gods. That's one of those things that just, like, ugh. Like, and it's only, like, you know, a few of them, like I said, are good. Like, Darkseid is a good villain. Big Barda.
And for me, even in the preview pages, Mr. Miracle, Big Barda, Orion, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start getting a little bit deeper than that, once you start going deeper than, say, Light Ray.
What?
I've got my blinders on. I got whatever it is that's going to alert me to something fishy is going on.
You're not getting that Forager Bug book that's coming out?
No, I'm not getting the Forager Bug book, Todd.
Or whatever it is. Now, for me, there's a couple of good villains on the New Gods side. I like Kalibak. I always liked, you know, the brother who's, you know, scorned because you know, Orion was the other son that got all the, you know, noticed, even though it was terrible. I like him. And Desaad is the creepy scientist guy. But that's about it. That's your New Gods, and that's all. We don't need no Granny Goodness. We don't need Glorious Godfrey.
Right. See,
I'll give you a Steppenwolf, because They did, you know, Born to be Wild, but everything else, no.
Now, I'll say this. Granny Goodness, I could take a reliever. Glorious Godfrey, depends. But the villain side of the New Gods, I think, work because they've kind of been positioned more as Justice League villains than anything mm-hmm. else. Like, in my mind, like, they are New Gods, but they're Justice League slash DC Universe villains first, and then New God villains second.
Mm-hmm.
If they were just specifically New God villains,
mm-hmm.
then I don't know if I would be able to buy that.
Now, I would be all in on a live-action Granny Goodness if Granny Goodness was played by the actor who did the voice in the Justice League cartoons. If Ed Asner played the live-action Granny Goodness, bam, I'm all in.
Side note, you mentioned Ed Asner.
Mm-hmm.
Asylum, who we've talked about here on the show before, who do the Hollywood mockbusters, the direct-to-DVD things that squint and you miss them and Granny might think of the red box that's the actual real movie.
Right. Oh, it's out already!
Right, so in conjunction with the upcoming Cars 3,
mm-hmm.
they have a CGI direct-to-DVD movie called Cargo.
Oh my goodness, two words?
No, together as one word, but like they're jammed together as one word, but the G in the middle is capitalized.
Oh.
And it seems to be kind of an amalgamation of the first two Cars movies.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen the Cars films?
No, I have a list of Pixar movies I haven't seen, and Cars is on it.
Watch the first one, second one, you get two copies. But the first one, Paul Newman plays I guess he's like the second lead of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget, his name's Doc, right?
Right.
So Ed Asner is playing the Doc role in this. It's the same exact car. And it's Ed Asner trying to ape the voice that Paul Newman did in the Cars movie.
Oh my goodness. And we know how much Ed Asner sounds like Paul Newman.
Well,
I almost said Paul Williams.
Not Andy Williams.
No. It's little Enos Burdett in the Smokey and the Bandits movies.
So we're completely off the subject here, but Tom King, Mitch Gerard's Mr. Miracle book this summer. I'm excited. Another DC book that I'm excited for is the book that's coming out this November, Todd. Oh my goodness, November.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book called Doomsday Clock. Written by Jeff Johns with art by Gary Frank. I'm in already.
Right.
But this is, I guess, what's spinning out of what we're going to see at the end of the Button storyline that wraps up this month.
Mm-hmm. Today, actually, as this comes out.
Right. And this ties the Button stuff into what's going on in Superman and what's going on with the Watchmen people coming into the main DC universe.
Right. Now that it's all been the end of Flash has been spoiled on me, that there's Watchmen characters involved.
Well, being no, the Button, I kind of sort of assumed as much.
No, I'm joking around. But honestly, when you sent me this news article that we're going to... I didn't even open it.
Right.
I didn't even open it because I saw Doomsday Clock. I saw it looks like the Watchmen clock. You know, the Button's going on. I'm like, this sounds like something if Flash wasn't late, that it was supposed to work out. But it seems like they made the promise that nobody would spill the news till the Tuesday after Flash was out, which was supposed to be last week.
Right.
So they all get to announce it the day before the book comes out. This is like a bad timing that the book was late. So I'm like, whatever, I don't need to know it. And they're like, oh, there's information in here. And I'm like, nope. I think we can, get the gist of what we're talking about out without me reading like, hey, this is what happened at the end of Flash. So. That's kind of the way I handled this.
Right. So I didn't read the full article myself because of the same reasons that Todd just mentioned. I didn't need anything spoiled about me. And tons of spoilers are out about that issue of Flash already. So if you haven't read it, beware.
Mm-hmm.
But the main takeaway from this is that this is going to be a 4-issue miniseries, not directly crossing over into anything else, and no side one-shots.
Which is crazy in this day and age.
Right. And that's the real story about this.
Mm-hmm.
For me, at the very least. In that, if you just want to read this, you can. Now, this is kind of almost making me want to read what's going on in Superman just so that I'm not lost.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure that once it gets a little bit closer to November, we'll know a little bit better of, like, you know, we'll probably get the closest that we're going to get is maybe about a month or 2 months out. We'll get in the Superman books. It's like, Doomsday Clock starts here.
Right.
And we might have to pick up like one or two issues at the most of Superman to kind of lead into this. That I got no problem with. It's nothing that I'm being forced to. Now, they're saying that it's going to be these four issues. And if with these four issues they do deliver a beginning and a middle and an end of whatever this story is, then I say kudos to you, DC, Geoff Johns, and everyone else involved with this. But if this ends up to be like, oh man, the story ended up being so big we had to add another issue sort of thing.
We had to add an issue of Blue Beetle.
Right.
Like Sinestro Corps War.
Listen, I've got my bottle ready to smash in the edge of a table just in case.
I'm with you. I think this is brilliant. This is my dream booking in my head where it's like, I think it was like, oh, we're gonna have this Doomsday Clock and it's gonna tie into every book and this is gonna do blah 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 and we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, and then Secret Empire just got crapped on for like weeks now, even though it's completely for different reasons, but because of all the hate for Secret Empire, people are like, we're all burned out on, you know, crossovers, and DC's like, let's keep piling on the goodwill that we have with the Rebirth and make this four issues and out. So I have a feeling that's what we are going to get. Like you said, maybe a few prologue books. But the only thing is, I don't think we're going to get a definitive ending. I think they even said it's like with Rebirth, you know, that was kickstarting. And then after that, I think Geoff Johns even said it's like a 3-part plan. So I think that's going to be, we're at our first part now. The second part is going to be in November. And then I think there's going to be a big crisis thing that comes out of this, because everything at DC has to be crisis. You know, you need name recognition. So that's my take on it anyway.
And you mentioned Secret Empire. I've talked to a few people who are kind of insulated from comics Twitter.
Yep.
And they read Secret Empire and they said it's good, but I'm just like, I can't. I can't bring myself. And it's not even all the comics Twitter nonsense that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I was insulated from comics Twitter and I didn't know everything that was going on with all the Secret Empire stuff and all the Cap as a Nazi and all the, you know, whatever else.
Yeah, he's a Hydra agent.
Okay. It's just that I'm burned out from Marvel events. Like, Secret Empire could be done, and I could be kicking myself because I missed out on the greatest Marvel crossover in the history of Marvel crossover. That's a gamble I'm willing to take, because the last couple either were good but super late, or just kind of okay and super late, or not good and late.
And now we have one that people are saying is good, and because they have 9 artists, is on time, and you're like, I'm out.
Right.
And you know what got me out? I think I may have told this story on the show before, is that when it comes to I don't care about Cap being a Hydra agent, Nazi, whatever. I don't care about all that. But by the time we got to issue like 14 of Steve Rogers' Captain America, I was like, this has gone on too long. So now you're going to throw me into a giant crossover? I'm like, no, like, if you had maybe 6-ish, 1 trade paperback, and then gave me Secret Empire, I probably would have stayed around, but it was just too long for my taste.
Right, and it's tying into Cap, the 2 Cap books, if you're not already getting that. There's all these one-shots and miniseries, and they really keep hammering it, that, like, every issue is important in this.
Well, every issue of Doomsday Clock is going to be important, too.
Right, all 4 of them.
That's right. I only wanted 1 and 3, and they're making me buy 2.
Yeah.
And 4.
So the last bit of news is just some updates and kind of just some professional tales that kind of went under the radar, I guess. A lot of the news sites didn't pick this up, but obviously Todd and I have our feelings in regards to the grading systems. You know, we kind of always hammer on CGC since they're like the big gun. But there's a lot of other grading systems. Like, didn't CGC sign an exclusive with one of the convention chains that they're the only ones that are allowed to be there?
The Reed Pop ones.
Right. And that's pretty big. That's, you know, that's C2E2, that's New York. That's a couple other ones.
I think Seattle, the, right. the Emerald City Con. So, yeah, there's a couple. I think the only big one that's left is San Diego. That's like all the territories can come to.
Right. So the one thing I want to kind of get into, just kind of briefly mention it, because it's less of an issue and more of a scheduling, it looks like, disagreement. But Adam Hughes was at MegaCon recently, and CBCS, which is one of the other grading systems, advertised that Adam Hughes was going to be doing a signing at their booth without reaching out to him or finalizing the deal.
Okay, I want to go on record because I read a little bit more on the Facebook. Is they were working towards a signing?
Right, but they hadn't agreed on anything.
Right, and the company, I keep forgetting their initials, decided to...
CBCS.
CBCS announced on their Facebook that it's a go and that's what's going to happen. There's going to be, I guess, like sketch authenticating and signature authenticating and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, no, we couldn't make the deal happen. And they were like, we're done. We're done working with you. And we made the offer. We're still willing to work with anybody else. So I find that, like, there's bad blood there. I don't know, but go on.
But the other one is a little bit more deep as it goes. And this is one mm-hmm. involving Jim Starlin and CGC at a convention that happened this past weekend. So what had happened was a convention goer came over to Jim Starlin's table with a CGC witness
mm-hmm.
to watch Jim Starlin sign these books. Now, Jim Starlin himself admits... that he typically does not charge for his autograph, but he does have one of those donation deals for, like, whatever charity that he might be working with. I know a lot of them will do, like, the Comic Book Defense Fund. Like, or I know the like Heroes. Mark Waid will have that there.
Or the Heroes Initiative is
Heroes
a
Initiative
one.
Or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this guy comes over, and because it's CGC, he's like, well, typically I don't do this for CGC. You have the witness person here. Usually I do these for free, but obviously you're doing this because you're looking to do this at a profit. Let's work out a deal. Let's work out some sort of price. A price that ends up being agreed upon. The witness walks away while Jim Starlin is signing the books. Then the person walks away without paying upon the agreed upon price. Jim Starlin goes to the CGC table and says, hey, you were just at my thing with some guy. I signed some books for you to be there to witness. He walked away. Can I get that guy's name so I can try to find him? CGC refuses. And that's where Jim Starlin kind of goes off on a little bit of a rant after this.
And I have to interject. I think you have a little bit of part of the story wrong.
Okay.
Yes. The guy, they decided on the price, and the witness guy left. Jim signed the books while he wasn't there, but then the witness came back and got the books off of Jim Starlin.
Okay.
And they were chatting, and Jim was, talking and got sidetracked about the money, and they left before, because this is important to me, because people seem to have a problem with the whole, well, the witness left. The witness didn't see him sign the books, but I've seen people argue the whole chain of evidence thing. Like, yes, it's the witness shows up, asks Jim Starlin, did you sign these books? Or you're giving me these books. You would have told me if you didn't sign these. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to watch the book. It's like the same. If I don't sit here and watch the whole sketch, if I come back and you give it to me and I'm like, did you draw this? Yeah, we're good. Like, why would the artist lie to me about? And I get it. There's gray areas in there, but that's more or less what happened. And he goes off because now he can't get the money, and he says, I'm done with CGC forever, and which is funny, when Jim is like, yeah, but I'll do the other guy's ones because this is bad blood now.
So I'm like, I do want to read his rant.
Right.
Now, I'm leaving just a couple things out, a little bit, but just to kind of, he says, here's this company charging a very high price to fans for a very questionable service and making a very healthy profit off what I'm giving away for free. I would think such an arrangement would earn me at least minimum cooperation in finding this person. Obviously, it didn't. I informed this lady, the witness, that I would not be doing any more CGC signings, and please do not send any more witnesses to the table. She then came to my table, told me I was being unreasonable, and I said that I would no longer be cooperative with them since they were not cooperative with me. Now, some of you fans may still want to deal with CGC, and that's your choice, no matter how I think you're just throwing your money away. But I won't be signing any books for them. I will do so for other authenticators at an agreed-upon price, but not CGC. I will also continue to sign books for free at cons, occasionally hitting you up for some charity. This is a choice for me to make, and I have done so. But I really think you want to go off and buy your own plastic sleeves to entomb your comics in and stop being suckers for this crazy scam.
Entomb is a good word.
If I was not already a fan of Jim Starlin to begin with, I'm more of a fan of his now.
And here's my take on it. He has the right to do whatever he wants.
Absolutely.
And if I was CGC, you know what I would have did? Paid him.
Yes.
I would have been like, how much is it? Because we can make so much more off of you than whatever you're, even if you're charging $50 for that signature, we're going to make that back with Jim Starlin people. That's not a problem. So I would have sucked it up. I would have sucked it up as a business deal and gave it to him because he's a legend. It's not like it's Joe Bag of Donuts that nobody knows. It's Jim Starlin, who in, 2 years when the Avengers movies come out, he's going to be even bigger. So, and I agree with him too. I agree with everything, but like where he says, this is a profiting thing. I don't believe everybody who gets their signature on a book and authenticated is profiteering, but I do think a lot of them are. And there is no doubt. And Jim Starlin Creations, Pip the Troll, Gamora, not so much created, but Adam Warlock issues. He created Thanos. These books are expensive books now because of the thing. And when you get them authenticated with a signature, the price goes through the roof on them. You can get that money. It's not imaginary. It's not fake. People can get this money. So he's like, yeah, well, I'm going to charge you. You have to pay me. And it's very weird. I don't agree with things. I don't care that he's not working with CGC because I don't get my book signed that way. So it does not bother me one bit. And I've seen some people who get really anal about their books and have to have them CGCs and into, and some of them can be really annoying. And I could see like why a lot of people like just, I don't even want to deal with this. Because it's like, oh, you breathe on it, you indented it while you were signing it. It's not a 9.8 anymore. I'm not going to make, it's not going to be worth whatever. So I'm just like, you want me to sign your books for free? Nobody here, I'll do it. I don't know. It's a really, to me, it's really interesting, all the craziness that's going on. And Joe, when did signing books become a business? That's all I want to know.
Oh, man. I hope it doesn't become a business. I hope this is the beginning of the end of this becoming a business.
Oh, sorry I went off there. And you know what? When we're at shows, Joe, we'll sign whatever you want for free.
Right.
Anytime. You want me to sign a sticker? You want me to sign one of my black show-worn t-shirts?
Mm-hmm.
Not a problem.
Remind me about charging for stuff like that.
Okay.
I don't want to go too long on the show about it, but... Obviously, as always, there are parallels between this and the world of professional wrestling.
Gotcha. Show charging.
Yes. And whether you're going to a wrestling event or a comic book convention, you could probably do both this weekend, because there are no less than 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 conventions going on this weekend. Minimum.
And I might even listen to all of them this week.
Oh, my goodness. Then you'll actually be informed. So... you've got a couple of your comic book-centric ones. You've got the Aurelia Comic-Con in Aurelia, Ontario, Canada. which is featuring such luminaries of the 90s as Fabian Nicenzia and Mark Bagley. You've got the 5 Points Fest, which is happening in New York City. Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, Keith Giffen, Peter David, those sort of folks are going to be there. Most of these are in New York this weekend. It's a busy weekend in New York, as there's another convention that actually we discussed a couple weeks ago with friend of the show Joey Schutz on Twitter. There is the Flower City Con in Rochester, which is featuring such luminaries as Jerry the King Lawler and Colin Baker.
The Sixth Doctor.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
You will.
Oh, boy. Wizard World in Des Moines, Iowa is going to feature Stan Lee, John Cusack, Kane Hodder, and Robert Englund. And as I'm going through the list, and I'm like, oh, I know what World Wrestling Entertainment superstar is going to be here. The pride of Iowa himself, Seth Rollins. Possibly the most famous person ever from the state of Iowa.
That is true. I think Captain Kirk was from Iowa.
Well, speaking of Captain Kirk, Todd, he's at Nickel City Comic Con in Buffalo, New York, which is not only going to have William Shatner, Billy Dee Williams, Diamond Dallas Page, and Jake the Snake Roberts. In a first on this show, Todd, signing, appearing at Nickel City Comic Con is Joe Montana.
Oh my goodness. Oh
my goodness indeed.
I would get a Mark photo with Joe Montana.
Now, Todd, don't whip your wallet out just yet,
mm-hmm.
because at the Motor City Con in Novi, Michigan, Michael Rooker is going to be there.
Yondu.
Ron Perlman.
Hellboy.
Barbara Eden.
Genie.
Lita,
did you say?
Yes, of the World Wrestling Entertainment.
I didn't know if you said Lena or Lita. Lita. I know who Lita is. She trained down in Mexico.
Vader.
Darth?
No, Big Van.
Oh, he's the guy who did the Lunar Pepper off the top rope.
The Lunar Pepper. Oh, my goodness. bring your Maxim magazine stuffed with unmarked bills. Dennis Rodman is going to be there.
I wonder if he's going to be in his wedding dress. I would get a marked photo if he was in the wedding dress.
Crow Sting.
Not Surfer.
Not Surfer Sting.
Oh, my goodness. I hope he plays, I'm trying to think of a good police song, but I got nothing.
All right. So, while I thought this would have been the ultimate Mark photo, because Ian Michael Smith, Anthony Michael Hall, and Kelly LeBrock are appearing.
Weird Science.
Now, when I saw that, I'm like, oh boy, the cast of Weird Science is hitting the convention circuit. But then at the very bottom of the list, because the whole thing's in alphabetical order, also appearing at the Motor City Comic Con in Novi, Michigan, is Rob Schneider.
Oh my goodness.
This convention has somehow become the hottest ticket in town.
That's right. Now, I'm wondering if Robert Downey Jr. is going to make a run in, because people forget he was in Weird Science.
Right, he was one of the bullies before he got his teeth fixed.
That's right. not his best role. His best role might be in Back to School. That might be Robert Downey Jr.'s greatest role of all time, because that is one of the greatest movies of all time. But Kelly LeBrock, I'd still get my pick. I wonder if she's got Steven Seagal's number still.
Oh, boy.
I want to get him on the show.
Now, the last convention that I would want to mention, unfortunately not a full-fledged comic book convention, but any time that we get our listeners, our fans, mentioning, contacting us, saying, hey, can you mention this convention? Can you talk about this convention? Because it's tough for me to find every convention out there. I try to make this as encapsulating as a list as possible, as long as your site doesn't take me to a Facebook page, or a link that's broken, or something that sends off my spyware alerts when I try to access it. Then by all means, I'll mention it, and I hate after we, like, do the show, the notes are out and everything else like that, and then I see on the weekend, somebody's like, oh man, having a blast at such and such con, and I'm like, oh, I missed that one, how did I not see that one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it drives me nuts. But this one is KeyCon 34, happening in Winnipeg, Canada, this weekend. It's more of a science fiction fantasy literature convention, featuring such guests of honor as Kelly Armstrong, Tom Allison, and Tamsin McDonough. Now, I'll be honest with you, I'm not familiar with a lot of these people, but obviously if you are a fan of sci-fi literature, fantasy literature, this is a big deal happening this weekend, and I would be remiss if I did not share this information with you, the listeners of this show, and of course, anyone who listens to the soon-to-be-named network.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the soon-to-be-named network, Todd, soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Anytime one of our shows come out, or any of the people involved in the shows are on some other show somewhere else, as long as they remind me, I put it up on the site so you could enjoy all the information, all the fun that we're having here over the soon-to-be-named network, whether it be us, Longbox Heroes, Longbox Heroes After Dark, where we get into some hot lawn care talk, and the announcements of what we're going to be discussing on Gallifrey Birds Roman Numeral 5.
Yes.
Prodigal Sons Podcast, Prime Defective. Don't know what to tell you about those shows. I think they exist. Fresher in Parlance, Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, Paladins of Voltron, Talkin' Gimmicks, Aim Downsides Podcast. All of these shows are available soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. And all this information will be in the show notes, of course.
Sounds good.
Speaking of information in the show notes, digital sales and freebies. IDW is having a sale on their Back to the Future and Back to the Future related things. DC is having a sale on things that tie into the game Injustice. I guess the new Injustice game came out this week.
I'm pretty sure, yes.
Mm-hmm. I understand Swamp Thing's in it.
Ooh, symmetry.
And that's all I know about it. The Injustice sale and that game coming out. Every time I see a game like that coming out, I'm reminded that eventually the day is coming that I'm going to be drug kicking and screaming into the 21st century when it comes to video games by my son once he starts getting a little bit older.
Who knows? He might just like Etch-a-Sketches. You don't know.
No. He's exploring and he wants to play more and more games. He's aware of what the Switch is. He's aware of all these newfangled games that I'm just not aware of. And it makes me sad.
It's going to be cutting into your comic buying.
It's going to be cutting into something. I don't know.
Won't be able to buy something that comes in a bag with a snake.
Right. I can get the bag. I can get the snake, but that's about it.
Right.
And, Marvel is having a sale on all of their collections of Jonathan Hickman's run on Fantastic Four. And the Dark Horse sale on all things Aliens is still going on.
I wonder why.
Wasn't it like, oh, because the movie is coming out this weekend?
This Friday is Alien Covenant, which I will be at.
Oh, okay. I have no interest in that movie.
I saw Prometheus, and I'm ready to go see Alien Covenant.
Was Prometheus any good?
It was, but it's very confusing because it's who did Blade Runner in the original Alien?
Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott. It's Ridley Scott mixed with the guy, is his name Lindelof, who did Lost?
Damian Lindelof, yes.
Yes, Damian Lindelof. So it's very Ridley Scott, but then it's too much Lindelof, where it's like, oh, here's our movie, and here's a ton of questions we never answer. And I'm like, okay, I don't need every answer, like, you know, mystery. But it's like, oh, and we're going to go off and at the end, and there's going to be another movie. And I'm like, nope. But there's a lot of really good and interesting takes that, you know, you have to look closely to get and, like, understand. There's some things that we find out about the people who – the engineers who created the aliens and everything. I liked it, but Lindelof messed it up. As far as I'm concerned.
On Podvocacy this past week, they read like the Wikipedia for Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen that. And boy, does that sound like a confusing show.
There are worse shows coming up, but you never know.
Just tune into After Dark for more information on confusing garbage coming out.
Look at us teasing the second show hard.
Listen, we got to plug our own stuff, man.
Nobody else is doing it.
Nah, we get okay plugs.
Oh, okay.
We're fine. So, No new freebies from what we had announced from last week, so all that'll be in the show notes here as well. Todd, let's get into what we're looking or what we read from this past week. You go first if you would like with the fix number 9.
Yes, fix number 9, written by Nick Spencer, art by Steve Lieber. Roy is hot on the case of the murdered starlet, and he's gotten a clue, and he goes to check it out, and he meets a very famous person in the Fix universe, apparently, of a TV show, which I wish was absolutely real. That's all I'm going to say. I believe they were calling her, and I quote, the horny grandma.
Correct.
On this show, family, and this the two-page spread of her doing her shtick from the TV show is absolutely hysterical. And we find out like what her deal is. She's a famous star who is running maybe a criminal organization and how it ties in with the case that Roy is following and how Roy gets, you know, maybe double crossed and all this yet again, shockingly, and many inappropriate things happen in this book. But terribly hysterical.
Yes. It's tough to get into too much about this book because, you know, the thing that I liked about this, while it was broken up that the first 4 or 5 issues or whatever it was is what was collected in the trade, and I'm sure, like, the next issue will be the end for the next trade. But the way that this has been reading is it doesn't feel like, okay, this is the definitive end of chapter 1. This is the definitive beginning of chapter 2. This is just reading continuously like one full ongoing story that kind of sort of never stops in a good way.
Right. And even if it did, it's hard to tell because it's a hard stop between Mac's story and Roy's story. Right. Because they're not together. It's like, oh, we get a whole issue of Roy. And then it's like, oh, now we go to Mac, and Mac's story ends, or, you know, we'll get a cliffhanger, and the next story will be Mac again, but then it's Roy. So it's like I lose kind of the rhythm of the book, like, you know, with superhero comics, it's like dot, 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 end, no problem. With this, it's like you said, it feels like one giant story, a la almost Saga in a different weird way. You know what I mean?
Right, like, but Saga actually does a good trope where when the 6 issues are up, they'll do something. They'll do like a flash forward. They'll do like a definitive end of a storyline.
True.
And then the next thing will pick up. It's like, it'll like say like 6 months later, or it won't be as direct as that, but it'll come right out and kind of give us information of time has passed.
Got you.
But that's, I think, one of the things that I'm enjoying the most about the fix is that it feels like a continuous story where a lot of times books that feel as though they're written for the trade or written to hit that 4 or 5 or 6 issue arc, where this is doing that, but it's also doing it in a way that's not hindering the single issue reader.
Mm-hmm.
Which sometimes us single issue, us floppies type people, sometimes we may get the short shrift because of the folks that do write for the trade.
Right.
So kudos to Nick Spencer and Steve Lieber on that. Now, speaking of, and I guess maybe writing for the trade or not, Star Wars The Screaming Citadel number 1. This is a one-shot tying in the next 2 months of a crossover between the main Star Wars book and the Dr. Aphra book. This felt like a great jumping on point.
Mm-hmm. It's a la like Vader down.
Exactly. And, you know, we may have mentioned before, a lot of times you may just want to copy the formula that works. And we did a news story a few episodes ago on how when it comes to a lot of stuff at Marvel, if it's not the really big high-end stuff, miniseries and stuff like that don't work, unless it's Star Wars. And Star Wars is just always working.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's true because the movies are kind of running hot and heavy, the Rebels TV show, that sort of thing. But if you were to pick up this book and this ends up being your first Star Wars comic book, depending on how much you already know about Star Wars, you know exactly where Luke is at this point in the book, and they give you everything that you need to know, not only about Dr. Aphra, but all of her crew.
Her companions, if you will.
Oh, I don't say that word. the big evil Wookiee guy, Triple Zero, and what's the other guy?
I don't know. Evil R2-D2.
Evil R2-D2. There you go. And it gives you the information about the past that those characters have with Luke Skywalker, and how she has this thing. If I bring you, Luke Skywalker, to this congregation, and she sees that you're a Jedi, even though you're not a good Jedi at this point, that's going to give me a chance for an audience with this person, and therefore, this thing that I have, which has some sort of Jedi Master Force something or other inside of it, this will assist you in and she can unlock it, this will assist you in becoming a better Jedi.
Right. While maybe having some shifty motives.
Of course. As we've, right. if we who have been reading Dr. Aphra since her appearances in the Darth Vader comic, her ongoing series itself, we know that she's definitely up to something. And I didn't mention, written by Kieran Gillen, who's been writing the Darth Vader, Dr. Aphra stuff for a while, with art by Marco Cicchetto.
Mm-hmm. And all of that, and we get an appearance of Watto, one of Watto's people.
Yes, oh boy.
So that's all you got. And I read it in the Watto accent in my head.
Right, I'm surprised that she didn't just choose Watto, because if we learned anything from the prequels, the Watto-type people, whatever they're from, are more powerful than Jedi.
They're not susceptible to the Jedi mind trick, that's true. But neither was Jabba, so
right.
It's all good.
You know what, though? Jabba's got some cachet with me. I don't know no Watto playing with his dice from nothing.
All I know is Jabba lost a little cachet when the remastered Han stepped on his tail. That's all I'm going to say. What gang leader lets somebody step on their tail?
That didn't happen in my version of the movies, Todd.
But Boba Fett was there to witness, so it gives it cred.
Right. Oh, boy. So this was really good. If for some reason you have been sleeping on the Star Wars books, this is, I think, a great jumping on point for them. And, you know, we talked before about how Marvel kind of sort of falls victim a little bit to bloated, oversized, whatever, crossovers and stuff like this. Now, granted, this book is a little pricey at $5, but to get a full story, you buy 5 books, and that's it. And you will get a complete beginning, middle, and end Star Wars story. I'm certain that from what we've read of the previous Star Wars books and what this has kind of led us to, will be enjoyable. Coming to you from us at a high recommendation, because the Star Wars books at Marvel have been really good.
And two last things on the Star Wars Screaming Citadel book. One, I found it amusing because I kept thinking of the woman that they go to see, her, like, her announcer guy looks like Dead Man to me.
Right, yes.
A Dead Man in a Time Lord outfit, that's all I'm going to say. Anybody who knows Doctor Who will understand that. And then, you know how they're doing a Dr. Aphra figure because, you know, the polling was rigged by...
Right, we talked about that last week.
Right. Well, now they need to rig it again so we get Luke Skywalker in his space tuxedo. I want a space tuxedo Luke Skywalker action figure.
That, I'm sure, could happen probably a little bit easier than anything else.
I want a space tuxedo. Oh, he looks so suave in it. Like James Bond meets Luke Skywalker.
I want the BT and 000 2-pack. That's what I want.
That's got to happen with the Wookiee. Oh my God!
Now I'm sure someone's modded them, and the variants of them are on sale online or something. And someone had a lot of the Chewbacca disguised as whatever he was from the Shadow of the Empire figures from 1996. No, I don't want something that's modded. I want something legitimate.
I want the licensed version for extra money.
I want to give my money directly to an individual who worked hard to make this. I want to give my money to Disney.
That's right.
That's the Disney sort of guy I am.
That's right. Disney's the corporation in the Aliens movies, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, man. So that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them mailed to your home, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out. Reminder to people out there, Marvel has put the digital codes back into their books as of this month going forward. Is that going to change again? Who knows? But I keep seeing people on Twitter talking. It's like, oh, this is a surprise. I didn't know these were back. And then I saw other people like, hey, I'm just catching up on my books. Why did Marvel take these away? And then they're like, oh, no, they're back already.
Yes.
So two of the things that we're doing with the poll post, one which we've been doing for a while, is Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd's still in the lead with 9 correct guesses and me with 8 correct guesses. And we are also keeping a tally of how many books we have purchased so far into the calendar year, breaking them out individually by publisher as well. Now, I made a mistake last week, which I did go back and correct, and I am very shameful about this. No excuses, even though I give one in this poll post. But again, no excuses, but that and this puts me ahead of Todd in books purchased calendar year 2017 to date.
I missed a book, too, this week, so...
Oh, Todd!
I need a spreadsheet and
triplicate. We're the worst ever!
I am the worst. It's Lucifer, so you don't have to worry about that one.
All right.
But, and I see how you're stacking the deck now.
What do you mean?
I'm pulling for my wife and kids now, so they count too.
I am.
That's called cheating, son.
I'm purchasing the books with my money from the store.
I don't think so. I think this needs to be a poll on our Twitter.
Between me and you, Todd, mm-hmm. I tried to get them to read the preview copies so I wouldn't have to buy them.
Mm-hmm.
And in their own special ways, they both refused to do so.
Extremely special ways, I bet. So now let me get, like, do my absolutes count as a DC purchase?
Well, no. Okay, what I'm purchasing though are not reprints of past released material.
Right, but you're buying books that are you even reading then? I don't know. This seems very shifty by Joe Sposto, in my opinion.
Well, even if I remove the 2 books that I've purchased so far, and you mm-hmm. add in your one that you missed this week, we're tied.
I don't know. This has gone completely over the hill. I don't even understand it anymore. But I guess I'll just play along for the rest of the year, even though, you know.
Yeah, whoever cheating. Came up with this idea should be beaten.
No, it's whoever twisted it to his own purposes should be beaten. And that would be you, sir. But... Since I went first, I pick yours first, right?
That's correct.
I'm looking at your list, and is it Flash 22?
It is Flash 22.
The end of the Button Saga.
Just like I think the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week is also Flash 22.
Yes, it was 51-49 The Flash.
Okay.
And 49, if Flash had come out last week, like it should have, it still would have been that would have been a tough call, Fix or the Flash. But Batman, Brave and the Mold.
Oh, yes.
Crushed it. Greatest title for a book ever.
I'm just surprised that no one thought of that sooner.
That's why Tom is the king.
The king!
My Credit Karma score just came in.
Cool. All right.
I'm just checking at my email, so I got a Credit Karma update.
That wasn't me.
All right.
So, no movement there on the list. Still Todd ahead with 1. And what do we have next? Oh, yeah. While you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out everything that we've ever done. It's all collected there at that site, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark, past poll posts, past Todd and Joe have issues, past anything. All of that is included there, and Yeah.
Yeah. So,
while you're there as well, be sure to also check out our little store link, which includes a way for you to purchase shirts and stickers with our fancy logo on it. Also, our Amazon link across the top of the page, where you could purchase anything through Amazon to your heart's content. You missed out on Mother's Day, shame on you, but Father's Day is coming out soon, month or so from now, whatever. And whatever you do with that, I don't know what people do with Father's Day, but whatever it is you do with Father's Day, do it through our Amazon click-through link. Some of the notable purchases this past week was someone purchased the Scooby Apocalypse Trade Volume 2 from DC Comics. Mm-hmm. Someone also purchased the Blu-ray of the most recent release from PWG, an independent wrestling promotion out of Southern California. And someone also purchased The Unexpected Inheritance of Inspector Chopra.
Hmm.
Sounds like a little fancy book there. I'm not really sure what it is, but thank you very much for buying it through our link.
Yes.
Did we have any new Todd's Art Attack this week, Todd?
No new art attacks this week.
Shameful. So if you're going to a convention, getting a signature, we used to even have people who were budding artists themselves and would tweet stuff at us. Just make sure you tag Todd's Art Attack on it, and we'll do our best to share your art, whether purchased or created yourself, with the rest of the world.
Yes. Show us your art.
Please. Now, let's get into Todd and Joe Have Issues. This week, we're talking about Batman Adventures Mad Love, an oversized issue featuring the origin of Harley Quinn in the animated adventures style. Now, I will say this, while this is an all-ages book, and while this is based on the Batman animated series, couple, two, three times the Joker might have gave Harley Quinn a whack in this.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Couple, two, three times in a different world, in a different time. Maybe if it was a different artist, might have drawn who drew Harley in the compromising positions that she may have been in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Might have caused comics Twitter to melt.
Yeah.
This is 1992. This is a different time, Todd. You can't judge.
Oh, I would like to see Frank Cho draw Harley getting an A. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, boy. Outrage, I say.
Yes.
All in all, I thought this not only was a really good book, it was a fun book. I knew I had read it before. I have this in my collection. But as I was reading it, this is one of those books that kind of stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And so much of it was coming back. And whether or not that's the tale of a good book, or the fact that these things and the way that these characters are set up in this book are, you know, from a book that came out, what, 25 years ago?
Yes.
Are more or less still beholden true to these characters today.
Well, that's something I want to touch on as this goes on.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed the book too, and I think it helps that it was an episode of the animated series too, mm-hmm. which it was almost word for word, later on, like 3 years later, I think they made it as an episode. So that like helps a lot too. That might help your memory. But yeah, I was down with it too. I forgot how truly original, the origin is in the one of the last true great origins in superhero comics. I equate it up there with Booster Gold's one of the last big ones, Doomsday and Bane, that's that area. Booster was maybe a decade earlier, but then you have Harley, and Harley is something that is one of the rarities, something outside the comic universe that was brought in and now is a staple. You got to give Paul Dini and Bruce Timm, big props for that, because I've thought about this. Do you remember when Catwoman was the big woman on campus in the Bat universe?
Absolutely.
It's not Catwoman anymore. Catwoman might not even be in the top two anymore. I'm thinking with the TV shows and stuff like that, obviously Arrow's not Batman, but you have the Al Ghul sisters and everything. Catwoman got shunted. And either way, Harley Quinn's the top of the heap now in the Gotham Girls. And there's no doubt about it in my mind. So, yeah, I give them props. I really like Mad Love. It's a great story. I could talk about many different parts of it. But the thing that jumps out at me most is how Harley has changed to the Harley we have today. And I kind of miss the old Harley in a weird way, because I think once emancipated from the Joker, it changes the character remarkably. I think not as damaged as a Bat villain should be when she's off on her own. If that makes any sense.
I get what you're saying. I know you read her currently in Suicide Squad.
Right.
I know you don't read the ongoing that had been penned by Jimmy Palmiotti, even the one prior to this by, I think it was Carl Kessel who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Where a lot of this familiarity still exists there at the core of the character, but what you say is true. Once removed from the Joker, once emancipated from the Joker, you know, it does change somewhat, but the origin is still intact. The way that Batman kind of, you know, a little bit more vocally than he would under normal circumstances, the main Batman universe, kind of explains what his plan is and how he can get out of any death trap. The Joker, of course, things have to be so elaborate for him. It can't just be as simple as him, you know, killing Batman simply. Or the fact that Harley Quinn pulls off the scheme that he wanted to do, figures out how to do it by just hanging Batman upside down so that the frowns look like smiles, and then he gets upset because he didn't think of it first.
Okay, maybe I didn't explain it right.
Okay.
I mean, the way this Harley is different from the Harley we know now. Not in the book. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I do, but I still see you mean like the movie version?
The movie or the one in the comic, the Palmiotti comic.
Because I still see some of this in the Palmiotti one. Not a ton, but I still see some.
Right, but I think the character works best with... And I know, and I don't mean like this is the way it should be in real life, but in fiction, is her in the abusive relationship. It makes that character more tragic in the mythos of bat villains. It's like the Joker's this psychopath, you know, the Riddler's this, Mr. Freeze is that. They all have their gimmicks. And to me, the like, especially reading Mad Love, I read Mad Love and I'm like, my God, like, even though it's done in a cutesy style, like you say, where she gets the A in a certain way, or she's, you know, trying to, you know, fool around with Joker. In the end, when she, after everything she's been through, he throws her out a window and she falls, and literally that whole, you know, battered woman thing where she's like, it was my fault. And to me, that's soul crushing. Like, soul crushing. And at the end, when the Joker sends her the flower and all is forgiven, like, she might be the most damaged at that point of all the bat villains. And I know people say it's a one trick pony, this and that, but you know, the Joker's probably the most one trick pony of all time. And you know, that doesn't, you know, stale the character. So I don't know. I just like that. The one who's beholden to Joker, no matter what he does to her. To me, it's fascinating as a villain. I don't know. I'm sorry. I went on for a little bit there.
No, good. Listen, you have feelings on this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how you feel about next week's book, Todd.
Yes. Next week's book is a Peter David classic, The X-Factor 87.
Ah, there you go.
Which was his first. See, we're going to go from analysis to another analysis book where someone, you know, analyzes the X-Factor team. And it's a pretty classic issue that probably has the most original take on Quicksilver I've ever seen, but we'll discuss that next week.
Right, and this was part of the big X-Men launch of the 90s, mm-hmm. where they launched the new X-Men book, just titled X-Men, kind of split the teams off as X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue, launched X-Force, and kind of, as you mentioned, shook things up on X-Factor, kind of making it its own separate entity.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't they working for the government?
If I remember correctly. Were, and they still were, and that's why it was a new team, and they wanted to get to know, to you know, like, figure out what's what on the team. You know what right. I mean?
Yeah, so this is another book that I read probably when it first came out all those many, many moons ago, and I'm looking forward to reading it again next week.
Me too.
So I think that covers everything before we get into Flash Talk, yes?
Yeah, I believe so.
All right, so if you will not be joining us for Flash Talk, we do bid you adieu. Thank you for listening to Longbox Heroes episode 346, and we'll give you a couple seconds here to skedaddle while we get into Flash Talk. And just as an addendum for a future episode of After Dark, it's IMDb where I see that ad for Twin Peaks that has the coffee cup that says R-double on it.
Ah, okay.
Yes. And that makes really, me mad.
Really pushing the After Dark this week. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Want everyone to know what we're going to talk about for Gallifrey Bird's Roman numeral 5.
That's right.
So, Flash this week. A week ago, prior to this, we had the reveal that Savitar was Barry. But it was wig-wearing Barry with a funky face. And in this episode, we learn that it is not the Barry that we met when Barry previously... It's not the original wig-wearing one. This wig-wearing one with the messed-up face is a time aberration.
Right. In the future, apparently, Flash decides to create a bunch of, what are they called? They're aberrations, but they're the different, the time remnants.
Yes.
And this is one of them that survives. And he's very sad because the rest of the team doesn't look at him as the original Flash. So he decides to mess up real Barry's life. And that's the gist of the story that we get from Savitar. Whether that's true or not, I don't know yet. Mm-hmm. But it's past the point when we meet wig-wearing Barry from the future, I guess. I don't know. We'll see maybe hopefully the next episode. But while all that's going on, Caitlin's working alongside the Flash team because they decided if future...
Right, you missed a part.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because the reason Caitlin comes to work with him is Savitar is one step ahead of him because he knows everything that Barry is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Sisko gets the idea that if they trigger something in Barry so that he can no longer form memories, then Savitar won't know what they're up to.
Right. They're going to affect his short-term memory.
Right. So they do that. Barry's confused. He doesn't know who anyone is. Who are these people? We do a show. What is this?
Mm-hmm.
And then Savitar forgets who he is. That's what causes Caitlin to come to them and say, you guys need to fix this problem because if you don't, I don't know, I'm going to kill yous all or something.
Well, no, it's also because of the fact that because Savitar gives Kid Flash his powers, he doesn't have his powers. There's a lot of weirdness going on.
Right, so them doing this is affecting more than just Savitar not knowing what they're up to.
Right. But we get some nice stuff with Sisko trying to bring Caitlin back from the dark side.
Right. And then the B plot, I guess, is Barry has to go testify at the trial of Heat Miser.
I don't think it was Heat Miser, but...
What was it?
I don't remember. All I know is he's a terrible carbon copy of Heatwave, and I hope Heatwave burns him up when he comes back.
Heatmonger.
Monger.
Ugh. And they do a prolonged bit where they give Barry these glasses.
They can't get wet. They can't get wet, Joe.
Can't get wet, Todd. That they're going to scroll across on the glasses all the information that he needs to give while on the stand in this high-pressure situation so that they can put Heat Miser in jail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to call him Heatmonger because that's a terrible name.
What?
And Todd, wouldn't you know who won the pony in this high-pressure situation, Barry has one drip of sweat come down, perfectly hit on the glasses, short them out, and the heat miser goes free.
I don't know. Like, it seems like they can build a lot of stuff at Star Labs.
Mm-hmm.
Moisture-protected glasses seem like some Cisco might be able to crack. But that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, there's a lot of wackiness in the episode. The only thing that I, like, the whole Time Remnant thing, Savitar, I honestly don't even think that's the real story, because something really weird is going on there. I don't understand all of that. But the only part of the story that I actually did like is now that Barry doesn't have all the weight of the world, I liked Happy Barry.
Mm-hmm.
I missed and it's funny because you see Iris too going like, oh, like Barry's happy. This is, you know, I haven't seen him like this in a long time, if ever. And it was cool to see, you know, Barry just not having a meltdown about everything. I don't need him to be like happy-go-lucky every minute of the day, but he's getting really too somber. And I guess, you know, knowing your future fiance is going to die will do that to you. But I just kind of like, you know, a little more, I don't know, happiness from my superheroes, not as brooding, especially Barry.
If only there was a way that we can send a message to someone asking them why Barry is so grumpy.
I think there's a snail mail can do that.
Okay. So, I like this episode, but it felt like filler.
Mm-hmm.
This felt like the first episode in a long time that was just put in here to pad out the season. That they took an idea that could, like, they took two ideas that could have been, you know, like C stories and tried to stretch them out into bigger things than they actually were.
Right. I agree with you. And the other thing I like is Wells and the new scientist bonding over coffees.
Right, that's and there's fantastic. Your D story.
Mm-hmm. Not enough speed bazooka for me. That's what I need.
But all in all, we're reaching the end of the Flash run here for this season. What, we got like three episodes left, I think?
I think so. You said Flash run.
Well, come on. I plan these puns out very well ahead of time so I don't sound like a fool.
Oh, that sounded like a shot across the bow.
Right. No, we only have two episodes left. This week and next. And I don't want to. I don't want to have to swear, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
But as I'm looking,
I think you got, did you get stooged off to something?
I got stooged off, man.
I know what you got stooged off
to. Come on.
I know exactly, because I was keeping it quiet.
You know how you feel about the dirt sheets and the rags and everything else?
Oh, Joe, don't go chasing waterfalls.
All right, so I'll be, let's just say, I'll be very happy in talking about next week's episode of The Flash.
Oh, did you see that there's extra wig work? Is that what you saw?
Yes. It's the all wig special.
Oh my goodness. Everybody, you get a wig. You get a wig.
They go to some alternate timeline that Barry created. Instead of being called Flashpoint, it's called Wig Point.
I would definitely watch Wig Point. Rewig when that's over with.
Oh, Crisis on Infinite Wigs.
Oh my god. Watch Wig.
And we've said it, listen, we've said it before on the show. If you at DC, Warner Brothers, whatever, you know, whatever your thing is, if you want to make money and have a display, you don't even have to have the people from the show there. If you just send to conventions, a setup, a display, and you've done it before, where you're like, oh, here's the Batman suits through history, right?
The Superman suits through
history.
The
Superman suits through history. The great wigs of the CW TV shows. I'm going to that display.
Oh, if they only let you put the Lucas on. Oh, my God.
And then you have the, like, they're like, for 1 week only, we'll have the ill-fitting hats of Mick Rory as well.
Oh, my God. Though, I just realized why you hate the George Lucas wig and beard.
Okay.
Because you look like George Lucas with your hair and beard. in that episode. Oh. It's self-loathing, Joe, is what it is.
I could shave this beard off if I want to. There's nothing that could save that beard from that episode.
Oh, fantastic beardage.
No. All right, so like I said, Flash was good, just felt a little padded this week. Getting to the end of the season, which I'm excited for, especially now I got this week's episode stooged off.
Right.
If only I knew then, I might go re-record something just to throw at the end of After Dark like I did last week for all the haters of Baby Groot, the special message.
You do have the specialist of messages.
Oh, boy. I have a special message for who writes the recaps of the show on IMDb.
Oh. All right, then. I guess that's everything?
Yeah, I got a lot of fixing to do on my end.
Yeah, I got to go check my credit score anyway.
There you go. All right, so everyone, thanks for listening to episode 346 of Longbox Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe. We'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.